Have you ever noticed how every complex industry eventually tries to boil its biggest, most unwieldy challenges down to a catchy three-letter acronym?
Oh, absolutely. It's like if it doesn't fit on a coffee mug, they just don't want to deal with it.
Right. Well, welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are unpacking a highly buzzed about cybersecurity framework called the DIE model. That's DIE.
Which is, quite the intense name for a framework.
It really is.
Yeah.
And our mission for you today is to cut through all the industry jargon, examine what this framework is actually trying to replace, and figure out if it represents a true paradigm shift for system resilience or, well, just a very clever piece of marketing.
Yeah, and to do that, we're looking at a 2026 analyst report and newsletter featured on all.net. It was written by Fred Cohen.
And Cohen's tone here is, I mean, it's what makes the source material so compelling to analyze, right?
Definitely. He approaches this not as some vendor trying to sell a new platform, but as an incredibly experienced veteran who is just refreshingly skeptical.
Yeah, he doesn't pull any punches.
He really doesn't. He notes right at the beginning of his report that he usually ignores new sets of cybersecurity initials entirely.
Wow, just ignores them.
Pretty much. Because he says they generally amount to nothing more than breakthroughs in marketing technology. He's looking for the actual engineering reality behind the buzzwords.
Which is exactly what we want to do here. And Cohen takes aim straight at the incumbent framework first, because, before we can even look at DI, we have to look at the old model it's trying to dethrone, which is the CIA triad.
Right, the classic CIA triad.
Yeah, and Cohen makes a fascinating point here. He argues that confidentiality, integrity, and availability aren't actually a security model at all. They are simply objectives.
Yes, and that distinction, the difference between an objective and a model, is critical in system architecture.
How so?
Well, I mean, an objective is a desired end state. You want data to be confidential, you want the system to be available.
Right, those are good things.
They're great things. But stating those goals gives an engineer absolutely no structural framework for how the system should actually be built to survive an active attack.
Oh, I see.
A true model provides mechanisms, right? It provides causality and a structural mapping of how components interact under stress.
Okay, let's unpack this. It's like saying your corporate business strategy is, make a lot of money.
Exactly.
That is a perfectly fine goal, but it doesn't tell your employees if they're supposed to be selling enterprise software or like baking cupcakes.
That is a perfect analogy. And Cohen argues that if we are just going to list objectives, well, three letters aren't nearly enough to cover the modern threat landscape.
No kidding.
According to the text, he actually prefers a much more exhaustive string of objectives for protecting systems, which is the acronym IACUTRs.
IACUTRs. Wow, that does not roll off the tongue.
No, it really doesn't. You definitely won't see IACUTRs printed on merchandise at a tech conference.
Right, but what does it actually cover?
It's a comprehensive matrix. It forces architects to look beyond just keeping secrets and keeping servers online, and it demands a really granular breakdown of operational realities.
Oh,
You have
yeah.
to account for identification, usage, time constraints, state conditions, and auditing records.
So it reflects the messy reality that true security engineering is just vastly more complex than three simple words.
Exactly.
Which brings us to the challenger. According to the research Cohen dug up, the DIE framework was authored by Sunil Yu at the 2020 RSA conference.
Yeah.
And its primary focus is a philosophical shift away from just trying to build impenetrable walls and instead focusing heavily on increasing system resilience.
And resilience really is the operative concept there. The philosophy is that building a fragile system and trying to protect it from ever being breached is, well, it's just a losing battle.
Because eventually someone gets in.
Right. Instead, you design an architecture that is expected to take a punch, get compromised, and still maintain its core operational functions. And the framework proposes achieving this by ensuring systems are distributed, immutable, and ephemeral, DIE.
Got it. Let's pull apart the mechanics of that, starting with the D for distributed. Because the core mechanism of distribution is that there is no single centralized target.
Correct. Instead of one massive database holding all the critical assets, the system is spread out across multiple nodes.
So if an attacker compromises one single component, they haven't captured the whole system.
Exactly.
It's kind of like splitting a highly valuable treasure map into a dozen different pieces and hiding those pieces in completely different locations worldwide.
That's a good way to picture it.
If a pirate manages to break into one location and finds one piece, they don't get the gold. They just have a useless scrap of paper.
What's fascinating here is how Cohen responds to that. Because while distribution undeniably makes systems resilient to localized failures, I mean, taking out one node doesn't take out the whole infrastructure.
Yeah.
Cohen is quick to highlight the hidden costs of that approach.
Right, because there's always a catch.
Always. The moment you distribute a system, you are forced into one of two highly problematic architectural choices. And both of them introduce entirely new vulnerabilities.
Okay, so the first choice is sharding the system, where different pieces of data or functionality live in different places.
Yeah, sharding.
But to make that system actually execute a task, you now need access to multiple places simultaneously. So going back to the map analogy, you now have to successfully travel to 12 different locations without failing even once, just to read the map.
Right, which is exhausting and risky.
You have vastly increased the friction and the number of operational dependencies that can just break.
You've replaced a single point of failure with this massive distributed web of potential friction points. The system might be more fault tolerant in theory, but the sheer complexity of orchestrating all those distributed calls creates major availability risks.
So how do engineers usually fix that friction?
Well, to avoid that, they usually opt for the second choice. Instead of splitting the content up, they just replicate it.
Ah, they just make copies.
Right. They put a full identical copy of the database in all 12 locations. So if one goes offline, the traffic is seamlessly routed to a replica.
But the problem with having 12 replicated doors is that you've just given an attacker 12 different chances to pick the lock.
Exactly.
If the content is mirrored across a dozen different nodes, you have essentially multiplied the attack surface for a data breach.
You really have. You buy resilience and availability, but you pay for it with a massive decrease in confidentiality. Not to mention the immense financial and computational overhead required to keep all those replicas perfectly synced.
Wow. So the trade-off is stark. Distribution solves one specific type of systemic fragility, but it leaks data and burns capital to do it.
Yeah. And this naturally drives engineers to seek a way to harden the individual distributed components so they can't be tampered with in the first place.
Yeah.
Which, you know, brings us to the second pillar of the framework.
The Inaui and De Immutable.
Oh.
So the underlying logic of immutability is that once an asset or a piece of code is deployed into production, it absolutely cannot be modified, period.
Correct. No changes allowed.
Because in traditional architectures, if a server has a vulnerability, a system administrator just logs in, applies a software patch, and updates the existing code.
Yeah, that's the standard operating procedure.
But under an immutable model, you never patch. You never alter the old component. If a change is required, you literally destroy the old component entirely and spin up a brand new secure one to replace it.
And Cohen does acknowledge this has strong use cases, actually, particularly for things like startup disks, where you need cryptographic guarantees that foundational code hasn't been secretly rewritten by malware.
So immutability is a powerful objective when you need absolute certainty of state.
Yeah, if a component cannot be altered, an attacker theoretically cannot inject malicious code into it or change its behavior to serve their ends.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, because immutability creates a massive architectural trap.
Oh, a huge one.
Think about it. If you deploy a system that literally cannot be patched or altered and a zero-day vulnerability is discovered inside that system, well, you've just trapped that flaw inside the environment permanently.
Yep.
You've essentially locked the door and thrown away the key, but you've left a broken window wide open. The bug is stuck there, totally unfixable. It's like a mosquito trapped in amber.
That is precisely Cohen's primary warning regarding the I in this framework. Because no software is ever deployed flawlessly, unfixable imperfections mean threat actors can exploit the exact same vulnerabilities repeatedly.
Right, because you can't go in and fix it.
Exactly. The assumption that something is permanently immutable is just a dangerous blanket statement. Cohen insists that we must replace that assumption with highly specific, rigorously defined parameters.
So it requires defining the exact time frames and the specific environmental conditions under which a component remains unchanged.
Yes. It isn't enough to just declare a server immutable. You have to specify that it is immutable for, say, the next 12 hours, and specifically under normal load conditions.
Because under a heavy DDoS attack, the system state might behave entirely differently.
Exactly, the required level of nuance.
Mm.
Cohen points out that he doesn't know how to make anything perfect. And since we are dealing with inherently imperfect systems, locking them down means acknowledging the flaws we are locking in with them.
That makes total sense.
If we accept that immutable things will inevitably harbor vulnerabilities, we have to limit the time an attacker has to find and exploit them.
which logically forces the framework into its final pillar. Because if immutable components are guaranteed to have trapped flaws, the only solution is to ensure those components don't exist long enough to be reliably exploited.
Right. Enter E for ephemeral.
Ephemeral. So ephemerality dictates that components have an intentionally short life cycle.
Very short. They exist only for the briefest necessary window, and then they're automatically wiped out and replaced.
To disrupt attacker persistence.
Exactly. If a threat actor manages to compromise a node, but that node is scheduled to be destroyed every 30 minutes, the attacker's foothold is just constantly being erased.
And Cohen actually aligns with this concept, doesn't he? Referencing his own previous work on the virtues of what he calls temporal microzones.
Yes, tightly controlling the time window of vulnerability is a really robust defensive strategy.
But there is a glaring fundamental paradox sitting right in the middle of this framework. I mean, if we bound immutability by time, we get ephemerality. But championing systems that are immutable, meaning unable to be changed, while simultaneously demanding they be ephemeral, meaning they're constantly being destroyed, is a total contradiction.
It really is.
Actively destroying and replacing a component is like the ultimate form of changing it.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, Cohen highlights that exact tension, saying we create things that cannot be changed only to immediately destroy them is functionally contradictory if you attempt to treat it as a universal architectural rule. You just cannot apply these concepts blindly across an entire enterprise.
So how does the framework even reconcile the friction between I and E?
By recognizing that short-lived is an entirely relative metric. Cohen describes this as horses for courses.
Horses for courses. I like that. Yeah.
Meaning whether a specific component should be ephemeral depends on a massively complex aggregation of risk factors and consequence levels. For a high-frequency trading server, a short, ephemeral lifespan might be measured in milliseconds.
Wow.
Milliseconds.
But for an internal corporate directory, ephemeral might mean it gets rebuilt from scratch once a week. You have to analyze what happens to the broader distributed system if this specific piece goes down.
Okay, but beyond the relativistic definition of the word short, Cohen points out a chilling reality about ephemeral architectures that kind of challenges the entire premise of the framework.
Yeah, he does.
Making things ephemeral does not actually stop permanent threats.
This is one of the most vital technical insights in the report, honestly. The industry operates on this assumption that if we constantly replace the underlying components, the attacker is just flushed out.
Swept away with the old component.
Right. But permanent presence often spans component replacement. The threat doesn't necessarily live in the node. It lives in the network layer or the orchestration layer. And he specifically uses computer viruses as the prime example here. A security team might think that destroying a compromised ephemeral container and spinning up a brand new clean one is a huge victory.
They assume they've kicked the virus out.
Right. But from the perspective of an advanced computer virus, that brand new clean container isn't a defensive wall. It is just a pristine new opportunity for infection.
Because the virus is itself a distributed attack methodology. It anticipates the ephemeral nature of modern infrastructure.
It expects you to destroy the container.
Exactly. It doesn't care that you burn down the host it was residing in, because its programming knows you are going to automatically provision an identical host in the exact same IP space moments later.
Oh, wow.
It simply waits in the broader environment and immediately infects the replacement. The ephemeral nature of the component didn't solve the underlying architectural vulnerability at all.
It just provided a highly efficient rotating door of fresh targets for the malware to consume.
Exactly.
It's the equivalent of trying to eliminate termites by constantly feeding them brand new untreated wood.
That is exactly what it's like.
You aren't starving the infestation. You're just providing a pristine new food source on an automated schedule.
And they're very thankful for it.
I bet they are. Which brings us to the overarching thesis of the deep dive. The DIE framework, distributed, immutable, ephemeral, contains some really intriguing ideas. But every single one of those letters introduces massive caveats, dangerous trade-offs, and hidden complexities.
So many hidden complexities.
Attribution leaks data. Immutability traps bugs. Ephemerality feeds automated malware.
Yeah.
So what does this all mean? Why is the cybersecurity industry so eager to jump on the DIE bandwagon if it has all these flaws?
It comes down to cognitive limits, actually. And Cohen makes a brilliant psychological observation here. He points directly to the biological constraints of human memory.
Really?
Memory. Yeah, specifically the psychological principle that human beings can really only hold about 7 plus or minus 4 things in our chunked working memory at any given time.
Oh, right, Miller's Law. It's the reason why dealing with an ocean of unstructured variables feels so overwhelming.
Exactly. The human brain physically cannot juggle the thousands of interconnected operational realities required to truly secure a global network.
So when a system architect is drowning in that level of daily complexity, their brain desperately searches for a lifeline.
Yes. People cling to acronyms like DIE or CIA before it, not because those frameworks genuinely solve the entirety of the engineering problem, but because they are easily digestible.
They fit perfectly into our limited chunked memories.
They provide a psychological safety blanket,
But
offering the illusion of control over something that is fundamentally chaotic.
And as Cohen bluntly observes, professionals will likely stay on the DIE bandwagon for the rest of their careers, primarily because it is a nifty three-letter acronym.
It packages incredibly complex, nuanced architectural decisions
Yeah.
into an easily sellable, digestible concept.
It is a breakthrough in marketing.
It really is. But Cohen is careful to note that he isn't dismissing the underlying notions entirely.
Right, he's not saying it's all garbage.
Not at all. He agrees that distribution, immutability, and ephemerality are concepts that should absolutely be kept in mind. But they must be kept in mind alongside the hundreds of other operational realities that also dictate system security.
So DIE doesn't magically replace CIA.
No, and neither of them should be used as the sole basis for architectural decision-making without placing them into the larger, messy context of real-world deployment.
And that is the core takeaway for you today, regardless of what industry you are navigating. Never let a catchy framework replace actual critical thinking. Real-world engineering problems rarely fit perfectly into a neat little three-letter box.
We really have to treat these models as analytical lenses, not immutable laws. Cohen's final thought on the matter is highly pragmatic. He believes it is always valuable to view problems from different angles, and his ultimate hope is that the DIE framework offers more light than heat.
More light than heat.
Yeah, he hopes it illuminates new ways of analyzing resilience without just generating useless friction and industry buzz.
That is a great standard to hold any new industry trend to. But before we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with one final provocative thought to mull over on your own.
Okay, let's hear it.
Something that builds on that chilling point Cohen made about viruses viewing new ephemeral components as fresh opportunities for infection.
Because the implications of that behavior run really deep.
Exactly. Think about this. If the very act of rapidly destroying and replacing our digital defenses gives attackers a constant automated canvas to attack, are we inadvertently operating a massive high-speed training ground for malware?
Oh, wow.
Right. By attempting to constantly outrun the threat with these short-lived ephemeral systems, could we actually be accelerating the evolutionary speed of the viruses themselves?
It introduces the Red Queen hypothesis into IT infrastructure.
Yeah.
We're building systems to run as fast as they can just to maintain the exact same baseline of security.
Because at the start of this deep dive, we talked about how complex industries try to boil their biggest challenges down to a simple, catchy acronym to make themselves feel safe. But what if, in our desperation to simplify the battlefield down to DIE, we aren't simplifying the problem at all? What if we are just training the threats to adapt faster and more efficiently to our simple little boxes?
That is quite the thought to end on.
Definitely something to consider the next time a vendor tries to sell you a silver bullet with three letters. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the real mechanics of resilience. Keep questioning the acronyms.